Hellodies, welcome back for another episode of Hello UX. Hello UX is a user-focused podcast aimed to help those pivoting into UX design.
We're here to empower designers and help those transitioning into the UX field by providing education, resources, and a platform to talk about their experiences.
Come because you're curious, stay to be empowered.
Thank you for joining us for Season 3, Different Paths When User Experience, Episode 8, a conversation with multilingual conversational designer Alana Libertad Cortez. Welcome to Part 2 of our episodes dedicated to conversation design. Just to remind everyone, for Part 1, we had a conversation with Hillary Black about the basics of conversational design, and she also shared with us a community she has created for conversational designers and her platform, Conversation Designer Jobs, where people can find employment opportunities in conversation design. If you need to refresh your memory, you can pause now, go back and listen to Part 1, and then we can continue with Part 2. For Part 2, we have a conversation with Alana Libertad Cortez, who will give us insight as to why there is need for multilingual conversational designers who can draw on their experiences and language knowledge to not just make conversational designs more inclusive, but to help shape and form the platforms that continue to leave out marginalized voices and experiences. Okay, so let's get started and listen to the end for an important announcement that I'm very excited to share with you. I have the pleasure of presenting to you Alana Libertad Cortez. Alana is a product and conversational designer. She's also the CEO and co-founder of Nettobox, a Spanish-focused conversational AI company. Her design focus ranges from IVR and IVA systems, chatbots, and software interfaces, as well as multimodal design. Welcome to the show, Alana.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
To get started, I would like for you to talk to us about how is it that you found yourself in conversational design. If you could walk us through your journey, that would be awesome.
Well, I had started as a UX designer. And prior to that, I actually have a long history of making multimodal performance. I went to CalArts, got my MFA in writing for performance. So it's any kind of scripts. So I've always had an interest in how people talk versus how they write. There's a big difference in listening to people have conversations. And while I was studying UX, one of my friends from that program at CalArts realized, oh, wait, are you in UX now? Hey, I'm a conversation designer. You should check this out. And so I did. And I realized, oh, this is like a lot of my past interests and past experiences, but in a new context. So I started to get more into like what exactly a conversation designer does, right? Mm-hmm. What are the kind of skills that I would have to get? Mm-hmm. What are the places that teach this and what kind of companies hire, right? So I kind of did the deep dive and then I got hired as a full-time. It was an interesting position because I was doing both visual and conversational design for this company.
Okay.
So I started doing that, and that was my first full time job. And prior to that, I had worked on a contract project basis for things like software that used multimodal stuff, you know, visual plus the conversation. And but then I just went deeper into the conversation and. And now I've been doing it for a while now. It's been very interesting.
My next question would be, how did Nettobox come to be?
Well, my parents were strategists for the Nicaraguan Revolution. Okay. I always have to preface that because I feel like it has made me someone who, when I see something that I think is unjust or doesn't work, I feel like I have to do something about it. So I really feel that... Spanish is what I'm talking about right now, but other languages in general are not being represented in the AI revolution. Correct. They are, or they're being designed by people who are not native speakers and who, and in UX in particular, right, you want to always be designing with the actual user, the real user, or else it's terrible UX. And so there's a lot of experiences that were being built in Spanish that were subpar, in my opinion, or that really didn't take into account the communities that actually use the language. And so I thought, well, someone should fix that.
Yeah. Oh, that is awesome. I think that's one of the smartest things a company can do when they're looking to get into this space. Find those workers that do have the ability to actually understand the language that they're building for. Right now, I'm helping in a project, and it's not conversational design, but I'm going to work with the Guatemalan community. And so I've had a few interviews with some teachers. And so one of my main things is we are building in Spanish, but the second layer of that is, you know, knowing that Spanish is not the same, right? Even like in the States, we have different kinds of Spanishes. I'm not sure if that's even the correct term. And even going like into Mexico, depending on the area of Mexico that you're from, some things are going to be slightly different. And I guess this could be a segue into my next question. When you are building multilingual conversational experiences, what is something that you take into account, or what is something that is different from your average conversational design process?
Well, I think one of the biggest things is that I am a heritage Spanish speaker, but I do not function as the designer in my company. I'm the CEO, okay. And there's a reason for that. It's because if I'm going to have systems designed that are, you know, using Mexican-American Spanish, and it depends on which area of the country we're talking about, right?
Right.
Within
it varies.
That. Mm-hmm. Or Mexico City, or my designers are Mexican, you know, that is their first language. They dream in Spanish. So that was really important to me. And I think anytime that we're going to be dealing with different versions of Spanish, we're going to be bringing in people whose language, like that's their background and their community. I also think community is really important with this because, a lot of, especially as AI, conversational AI gets bigger, the experiences are going to become a lot more complex. And it really does, it's more than just language, because language is so completely united with community and culture, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think it's important that whoever is designing the language has some kind of relationship to the community or the culture as well. And that's one of the ways that we can avoid, you know, some of the embarrassing mistakes that a lot of AI is currently doing, right? Where it's very clear that they have not had people from other communities involved in the creation of that. That's why so much of AI right now, like, says unethical things.
Right.
What that's pointing at is that you are not including other communities in the building of this. Mm-hmm. So that, for me, is the biggest difference between the way it's being built right now. Like, right now, it's kind of one group of people has done a lot of the work in tech, you know, in one part of the country. And they are the ones who are kind of like have defined a lot of that stuff from the top down. I don't think it's appropriate to build like that, but especially language experiences.
Right.
So, that's the major difference between my approach to building in Spanish than it is to English.
And now for a quick break to hear a word from our sponsor.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Welcome back, and we'll now continue our conversation with multilingual conversational designer, Alana Libertad Cortez. In your bio, we said that your design focuses ranges from IVR and IVA systems. Can you go ahead and let our hellodies know, like, what is this? I might not know and be familiar with these terms.
I feel like it's like a lot of people don't know because things are so quickly, right?
Right.
So old school IVR is the stuff that nobody likes when they call the bank, right? Press one, press two, press three.
Right.
Very frustrating. But because of AI now, the systems that are being designed are different. Like, they learn. You can speak to them. You're not pressing a button. A lot of people don't even want to call them IVR anymore because people get confused and think it's that old-fashioned type, and it's not.
Right.
So a lot of these old systems need to be shifted into the new AI systems and redesigned. So IVR, like conversational AI IVR, are basically how do we set up phone systems so that we can start to narrow down what it is people are calling for. I know some people get afraid that it's taking jobs, and I can understand that. On the other hand, it's also taking kind of the soul-crushing, repetitive stuff that nobody has liked having to do, right?
Right.
Answering, like, how you'd be shocked how many people are just calling to reset their password. So if you're working at a contact center and it's like, you know, the 6 hour of answering the same question, that gets very frustrating for humans, right. But the AI doesn't care, right?
Right, so. Right. No, that's awesome. Thank you for clearly, you know, putting that, the difference between these two. What advice would you give someone that's looking into getting into particularly multilingual conversational design?
Well, I think be aware right now that the AI in other languages, so we use percentages to talk about what the passing rate is, right? It understands how well it's understanding, right? Can it respond appropriately? And the passing rate on languages other than English is abysmal. It's terrible. Mm-hmm. And the robot cannot speak, right? The AI cannot speak other languages well. And so there is a huge opportunity in that, but there's also, it's kind of like, I consider it the Wild West, right? If you're a Spanish speaker, be prepared for those in tech to not understand the differences between how the languages are being treated by the AI, and the opportunities are there. But sometimes I wonder if companies are really aware of how important it is to have someone who, will they know that they should hire a native Spanish speaker? I don't know, you know?
Right.
I feel like a lot of my job also entails a certain amount of education, right? Mm-hmm. Or pointing out what I think is the obvious, but is clearly not the obvious to a lot of people in tech.
Right.
So I think that talk about the fact that you have another language. Mm-hmm. It does make you valuable, I think also be aware that it's like kind of it's the beginning of kind of this new phase. And so there will be like a bit of a learning curve for people and companies. I think that they're just barely starting to understand that they are going to have to approach building this a little differently. So I guess what I'm saying is like I was hired because I was handy in terms of like translating things into Spanish. Mm-hmm. But in the beginning, they did not pay me more for that. They just expected it to be interchangeable, right? Like, oh, English, Spanish, but Spanish is a skill. It is a skill. You couldn't do that without me.
Right.
So anyway, I guess what I'm saying is be aware that there is like an educational component right now with a lot of companies and how they're approaching, how they hire multilingual designers or anyone else. You know, I'm not sure if they appreciate yet the value of it, but it is really important, and it will put you aside because you are cheaper for them to hire if they know that they don't have to hire the translator as well. But just be aware that you point this out because you don't want to pay for it.
Right. No, you're bringing out a lot of good points. Any recommendations or any life learning experiences that you have to give to Holotis? They do possess the skill of having another language.
Well, I think that I don't want to say that we have to stand up for each other, for ourselves and each other, but I think it's really true because I think that for instance, Spanish is the second most natively spoken language in the world. Right? Mm-hmm. It's ridiculous that the AI cannot speak or understand Spanish well. How does that work with those numbers, right?
Right.
And so I think it's important to build our own experiences in our own companies, our own projects. Mm-hmm. I think that's going to be really important because we cannot wait for permission from groups that have not traditionally involved us in building any of this stuff. They're not going to give that. We have to take those opportunities. So not everyone is going to want to start a company, but I think that it's really important to go into every project, as someone who is bilingual or multilingual, knowing what you are representing and knowing that you do have to speak up, because you're going to be the conscience of a lot of that experience in terms of like how it's built, right?
Right.
It's not just, it's kind of the voice of the user, right? It's our job to be the voice of the user. So I think it's also realize that other languages, having other languages is, it's a skill. It's worth something, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Don't undervalue that. But also the next phase of conversational AI is it's global. Mm-hmm. So there's a huge opportunity there to build in like new ways, new experiences, include other communities and new groups, right? Mm-hmm. And it's so new that, I mean, we might actually be able to change a lot of the structure of how things are made right now. Like what we assume is normal, like the IVR is a good example, right? That used mm-hmm. to be standard, and now it's like considered ancient. And
right. And then a lot of people learn how to bypass it, right? They're like, operator, or start pressing the zero, and yes. They don't want to deal with it.
Yes, I'm really interested in like, there's all kinds of things to be built. And mm-hmm. I'm really interested in seeing what happens when people who have traditionally been kept out of the room start mm-hmm. to build these things. So, and like the number for Latinas in tech is 2%.
Wow.
2%. That is just shocking.
Just looking around, I can see it. I've been in companies and I'm looking around. I'm like, wow, you know, it's just a few of us women. And then when you break down to like, wow, it's just me. Like, you know, I'm the only Latina yeah. here. And so that is very interesting and it's very visual. So all those Latinos out there that are considering, you know, coming into UX design and maybe having a niche in conversational design, come on over. I feel like there's a lot of need for you guys. What resources would you share to help someone getting started in multilingual conversational design? You know, besides what there is right now, I'm not sure that I've looked and I haven't bumped into anything in particular.
Yeah, this is that's kind of what I meant when I said it's like the Wild West. It's mm-hmm. really because there's really not a lot of places to learn. Mm-hmm. In the beginning, a lot of my journey was like, how do I get all the information so that I can learn how to do this, right?
Because right.
it wasn't out there. But mm-hmm. the number one thing I would say is that LinkedIn is your friend.
Okay.
LinkedIn is huge in conversational design. Like you have to be on there.
Okay.
And put that there as your hashtag, right? So that you're going to get all those updates and you can start to find the community. It's very active on there. Mm-hmm. And so there's going to be workshops. You'll find them once you're hooked in with that LinkedIn community. And they're all very, it's like a niche, right? So we mm-hmm. all know who each other are.
Okay.
Like I asked you, oh, was that Hillary Black? Like,
yeah,
we all
yeah.
know each other. Know each other's names at the minimum. So I would do that. I actually have done some work for Conversation Design Institute, so I have to like let you know, but they do have a training program. They're one of the few that actually has a training program, and it's very decent. It's very good. It's going to show you exactly what the process of conversation design is. I think they also have an AI training as well, like a workshop as well that's online. It does cost money, but the one thing I'd like to point out is that it is tech. So as soon as I went into tech, I probably like tripled my income. Mm-hmm. And so it was worth it to me to invest in some of the training in the beginning, because I mean, I made that money back within the first week, right?
Right, right.
So it's an easier investment than university, right? That's a lot more expensive.
Right. That's also true. Yes, yes.
A definite, like I went to college. I yeah. can say that my degrees are what's supporting me right now.
Exactly, yes. I can. I sympathize with that too.
Yeah. So Conversation Design Institute, Women in Voice is a really good one as well. They okay. do a lot of workshops and they introduce you to a lot of people. And then once you're on LinkedIn, like for instance, I do a workshop where I teach women of color conversational design.
Awesome.
Yeah, because it was so hard to find.
Yeah, yeah.
So I figured, well, once again, I guess I'll
do it. I guess I have to do it.
So no, a lot of my great. Journey has
yeah,
been that.
Yeah. We're now on our fun question part. So fun question for you. And this is just to give our Helotes a glimpse of your personality. We would like to know, what is your favorite holiday song and why?
Oh, my gosh. Well, it's a little bit meandering the answer. But you know the little song, Con mi burrito sabanero, wake up.
Yes.
So that one is just like an earworm that has been in my brain ever since I first heard it. It never, I feel like that song never goes away.
Right.
And I have this Dotson and his mm-hmm. name is Churron.
Uh-huh.
But then it went into Churron because he looks like a churro.
Oh.
And then for some reason, this combined with that song.
Right.
So now I call him Mi Chorizo Sabanero.
Yes.
So it's got to be that song.
Oh, awesome. No, that is so cute. Thank you for sharing that with us. And well, maybe this also, we could lead us into, where can Helotes find you on social media? Do you have a YouTube channel that they could search for? Where can we find your insight?
You know, LinkedIn is really the place right
okay.
now. You know, we have a lot of my energy right now has been towards this startup, right? So we're about to start building for our first client, and we also do have we have social media maven now, right? So I expect that our presence online is going to get bigger, but I can always be found at LinkedIn and
awesome.
I'm active on there. So
Alana, it's been a pleasure having you, and I want to thank you for sharing with us your experiences, your insights, and also giving our Helotes a starting point of where they can begin if this is something that interests them further and that they should do research on. So thank you so much for being on Hello UX Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. It was great. It was great to talk.
Awesome. Thank you. It was great hearing what Alana had to say about multilingual conversational design and comparing the current space as being in the Wild Wild West, being the new frontier that needs help being shaped and formed by voices and experiences that are usually left out. If you possess the skill of being bilingual, trilingual, now is the time to jump into conversational design and bring your language skills and heat to the call to help transform this space into a platform that is inclusive of many voices and experiences. This wraps up Season 3, Episode 8, a conversation with multilingual conversational designer Alana Libertad Cortez, and Season 3, Different Paths When User Experience. This season, we brought you different experts for various roles that contribute to the user experience. If you all noticed, most of our guests for this season shared a common thread in that they came from different career paths, but at some point they pivoted into UX design. With a combination of having a foundation user experience and making use of previously gained job skills, they were able to move into a niche market where they are striving and loving what they do. Hopefully you saw yourself reflected in some of their stories and were encouraged to take action and make plans for what is your next career move. So as we're winding down Season 3, I would like to thank all of our Helotes. Thank you for listening and supporting us by liking and sharing our episodes and subscribing to our podcast. If you haven't subscribed to our podcast, now is the time to do it. Next to being a sustainer of a podcast, subscribing to it really helps us out. So please do your part and help us out. Thanks. And now for a big announcement. I would like to announce that Hello UX is changing its platform as we're going live for Season 4. Live interviews through our YouTube channel and Facebook Live. But don't worry, if you still enjoy listening to our episodes, our interviews will be made available on all major streaming platforms. Before we leave, we would like to invite you to like us and follow us on Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, and Twitter. Check out our YouTube channel and don't forget to subscribe as we're going live starting Season 4. Lastly, don't forget to subscribe to our podcast available on all major streaming platforms. If you would like for us to cover a specific topic or you're just dying to give us feedback, send us a message via our social media channels or send us an email to info@hellox.design. I'll repeat, info@hellox.design. And now a word from our sponsor. Overflow Digital, a digital agency specializing in all your professional website needs, meeting you at the crossroads of data, design, marcom, and UX. Before we leave, we would like to leave you with this quote. I hope that this year to come, you make mistakes, because if you are making mistakes, then you are making new things, trying new things, learning, living, pushing yourself, changing your world. You're doing things you've never done before, and more importantly, you're doing something. Neil Gaiman. This quote speaks to me personally as I'm always pushing myself into new projects, new challenges, and this is why we're going live for Season 4. We'll be diving into a new platform, which we'll be learning along the way, I'm sure. And there'll be hiccups, there'll be mistakes, but we're here for it all. Okay, Helotes, it's goodbye for now, but we'll be seeing each other soon live. Hasta la próxima.